You're listening to the CD Baby DIY Music Podcast. Welcome to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. This is our roundtable edition of the podcast, and joining me are Chris, Robert, and Jordan.
Hey, hey.
Hello.
And my name's Kevin, by the way.
Is this going to be our last episode of the year?
Our last episode of 2007.
We were elected among the top 50 new podcasts of the year by iTunes.
Woo. Yes, that was exciting news. We just saw it by surprise. We opened up iTunes and had the best of 2000 for podcasts. And
2007.
I keep saying 2000.
I don't know. Wrong year.
But that's right along with shows like Car Talk, 60 Minutes, and...
So we appreciate all of you out there who's supported the podcast and have left comments on the iTunes page.
And we'll think of you when we're driving down Rodeo Drive in our BMWs.
Exactly.
Is this a lucrative business? Because you guys aren't cutting me in on
it. Well, anyway, on with the show. This time around, we're going to do something special for the holiday season. For starters, all of the Christmas music you'll be hearing throughout the show was supplied by you, the listeners, so enjoy the music. We should have a list on the website of all the artists that contributed, so if you hear something that catches your ear, head over to cdbabypodcast.com and you should be able to find out who that was. And then later on the show, we'll be taking a look back at a few of our favorite moments from the podcast so far. But before we do that, Robert, for the month of November, you did an album in a month challenge.
Yep.
And wrote and recorded an album all on your own.
You know, I got from point A to point B. I sweated. I maybe even shed a tear here and there. I did accomplish my goal. 7 songs recorded. Well, I was hoping to do more than 7, but 7 was what it ended up being. But start to finish, we did it all through GarageBand. I burned a CD, and it's going to be my Christmas gift, actually.
Oh, that's a good
for
idea.
For friends and
that's
family.
A good idea.
So that's that. I think more than anything, it was fun. I didn't feel inhibited, so I tried and experimented with a lot of different stuff. I was able to be a little more comedic, actually, with some of my music than I'm usually feel comfortable doing, which was fun.
And did you learn any new tricks in the writing process along the way, or did you learn anything about your own writing process?
Well, it was definitely the first time that I had been basically tracking and creating at the same time. Because before, I always had to have verse, chorus, you know, everything written out. Sometimes, you know, even an extra guitar part before I started bringing in other instruments. In this case, like, I would just track something, I'd loop it, and I'd just start layering on top of it. And a lot of lyrics came, you know, at the very end when I was just like, okay, I gotta put some vocals on this song.
Kind of like Remain in Light, yeah. Probably.
Do you get to know how many people completed it?
You know, I'm guilty because I have not notified them that I finished my album.
Does that mean you didn't win?
Yeah.
Everybody wins.
Yeah. And actually, if anyone has more questions about that, just send us an email. I'll be sure to enlighten you to my process and maybe even a few of my slightly embarrassing tracks.
Well, I'm proud of you for finishing because I remember when you started, like, going into week 2, you were sweating it out a little bit because... Yeah. You know, you had lots of things going on, working on the podcast, girlfriend, that right there.
All that stuff takes time.
Yep.
Had to eat somewhere in there.
Yeah, you had to
eat. Had to grow a beard.
So you did it all in GarageBand. Do you have any plans to go back and spend more time re-recording any of the songs, or are they just pretty much done, or what?
You know, I haven't decided yet, and people have already been telling me that I should, and that the certain songs they like. People have suggested I go into a studio and record some of them. So one thing that I think I might considered doing is use a more advanced software, or like a software that has richer MIDI sounds, mm-hmm. because GarageBand is a little bit limited in that. Or maybe use some real keyboards or something. I think it would open it up if I had a larger palette to work with.
So next November, anyone out there who wants to participate, you can do that. Album in a month. All right, well, it's the season where people reflect on the past year. We thought it would be fun to look back and play a few of our favorite moments or favorite nuggets of advice some of our guests shared on the show. So to start it off, since we normally do an interview recap, I should probably mention the last episode, which was the interview with Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses and Velvet Revolver. That was definitely a highlight for the podcast.
It was a highlight for me to hear your guitar solo from 1990. That was tasteful. Yeah.
Your guitar lead was really solid and in time. it was. I was impressed.
The funny thing
expressive. You didn't say expressive.
The funny thing is that tape goes on for it's the whole tape. If you listen, there was two, they're not really guitar solos, but there's sections where there's guitar themes that Slash plays, and I knew those, and then when it got to the big solo, the whole thing would just fall apart. It was pretty entertaining, but I didn't want to bore everybody to tears playing that for them, but it was a fun interview, and somebody left a comment on the website saying I sounded a little starstruck. I was actually just really nervous because I had no idea what to expect, and I was really trying to figure out how to make it make sense with the idea of our podcast and not just, interviewing some famous person. So, they told me I'd have some time to set up. Of course, he was running late. And so they basically threw me and Duff in a room by ourselves, and I hadn't had a chance. I'm fumbling with my mic cables. And so I was actually just kind of nervous but it ended up being good. He was a super nice guy, which when you read about those bands and especially Guns N' Roses, there was a lot of tabloid stuff about them. You really don't know what they really like as people, if that's just something the media's created, if they're really, just jerks and full of themselves. And I don't know about the other guys, but Duff was a super nice guy. And we were just hanging out, and it was interesting, some of his take on the music business, being in a band that has sold, I know that they had one of the highest debut albums ever. But I thought it was really cool listening to him talk about, how he's really just a music fan. I mean, he's going to play music whether he's selling out, stadiums or selling CDs from his house, and I thought that was really cool.
When you said highest debut album, you mean GNR?
Yeah, Guns N' Roses. So I thought that was really cool, and to hear him talk about, how he'll, when he was playing in his band Loaded, just the indie project he had, how he'd play places and people from, other bands from that era, the 80s era, would be come to his show whining that they can't get gigs or record deals anymore. He's like, dude, you just got to go do it.
Yeah.
No one's going to come do it for you. And there are a lot of musicians out there that make it to that level and aren't going to pursue music ever again unless they've got all those people that can handle everything for them and there's people making a big fuss about them. But it was very evident to me throughout the interview and throughout the day when I was hanging out at the show that music is his life. He loves bands. When we were hanging out, he was talking about all these bands in Seattle that he's friends with. They're bands that no one's heard of. It's not like it's the who's who of rock and roll, but they're just guys that, he's fans of their music and he goes to shows. And it was interesting to see that in someone who's made it to that level, that at heart they're just a music fan, just like, the rest of us. And the other thing I took from that interview is that how important chemistry is. That chemistry existed before they sold millions of records. It's why they were so good in the first place. And I think there's something to be said to just finding the right people and that just that magic happens. Now we're going to move on to, we all have some sound clips that we took from past episodes. We wanted to revisit because we thought there was good advice. Starting out, we have Chris. You selected a couple clips from our interview with Lisa Lapine. Why don't you tell us about that?
I did. Lisa Lapine, promotion queen.
She calls herself that. Chris didn't just make that up.
No, yeah.
Oh, and this was episode two.
Correct? Yeah, episode two.
It was, which is one of the main reasons I picked it, because I felt like it was so early on in the show and it was such a good episode that a lot of people might not have heard it. So this will remind them that it's there. And also just because so many of the things that she said have kind of become a foundation for subsequent discussions that we've had, so...
We often say to people, the most valuable thing that you have as a musician or an artist is what makes you different, not how you're the same. I mean, we're always about how, where do we fit in, how do we, but really what makes you different is what's going to be unique and what's going to be valuable. That's the part that people are probably going to pay for or going to, you know, want to come connect with you rather than someone else. What I talk a lot about is how do you tell your story to the world? Because marketing, which is my specialty, marketing and promotion, thus the Lisa Lapine promotion queen, you know, it's about promotion, but it's really about moving you forward, is about being able to think about how do you communicate your uniqueness, what's different. And usually we do that through stories, through telling a story. And that's how we engage people. And so you can't tell a very effective story until you know your story.
That quote, I picked that one especially because that's really what she does. She sits artists down on her couch. She becomes the shrink for them, helps them figure out their story and their persona, which is essentially their branding, which they have to use when they go out into the world to sell themselves. And one of the famous quotes is the reality of the glut, which is her way of saying that basically now we're at a point in history where more music is being made than ever before. It's being made to be marketed. There's cheap technology, so everyone can do it. And with those millions of bands, you really need to stick out. So her process for honing in on who you are as a sort of the truest artist is really important.
The idea of the artist's story comes up in so many places. You always think about, well, what makes an artist successful? And, you know, there's the fact that they've got to be good at their art. A lot of times is that they're presenting themselves in an interesting way or they're an interesting person, and that just is because they've developed who they are in the story and what makes them unique. So the theme of what's your story seems to be coming up more and more in all the artist interviews I do. So I thought it was cool that Lisa started out. She was our first interview and kind of laid the foundation for that.
One of the realities of the glut that she mentioned was basically that because there is so much music being made, people's tastes are so specific now, you can find a genre for pretty much anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And because of that, the point of discovering your story and how to market yourself isn't to appeal to everyone. It's to appeal to those people who, you know, your story resonates with. I think not selling a million albums is probably how it's going to be forever now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we have another clip. Let's go ahead and play that here.
One of those really critical ideas with persona or with branding is that this is not about appealing to everyone. You know, we're not trying to become, you know, the Quaker oatmeal of the world, you know, where it's just everybody can eat it and it's good for everybody. You know, it's more like, how can I create a persona or a brand where people will be drawn to me that should be drawn to me?
Indeed.
I'm sure that statement frustrated.
I loved it. Loved it.
Up next, Jordan, you selected a couple clips from our interview with Alicia Rose, episode number 3.
Yeah, this has been mentioned a few times on previous podcasts, but I play the flute in this flute quartet. We're a fairly new group. We're basically at this point still kind of building our repertoire, but we play out every once in a while. And at this point, we're definitely just playing to friends and family, you know, people who are required to be there. And I just thought...
Captive audience.
I really liked these two quotes. My favorite quote of the whole thing is she says, "You can't pretend to be strategic when you don't have fans to be strategic for. Your strategy has to be created and built. It can't just arrive." So here's the first clip.
You know, you don't get something for nothing. And something is developing a draw. It's telling your 10 friends to come see you play the crappy show at such and such, or having a house party, getting 50 people out and working. When you've got those 50 people, you've got 50 people who came to your house to see you play. Well, give them something to take with them. It keeps them informed. Get them to sign up on your mailing list. Develop a draw. Be creative, because you're marketing yourself. And marketing yourself a little bit turns into marketing yourself a lot, turns into having fans.
And here's clip 2.
Well, once a week is too much. Twice a month is fine. Once a month, if you're big enough and you need to actually keep your, while you're still building your draw, you really can't play too much. Once you realize you can't get all your friends out once a week, because now everybody does want to go see you, you know, maximize and minimize. So play once every couple weeks when it makes, or that kind of slow it down. Then when you really have a draw and you want to bring more power to that, slow it down even further and make more money. You know, because if you've got 100 people, 150 people who will come out and see your show, you know, do one once a month. And then eventually when you're making a lot of money, do one every 6 weeks and then tour other markets in between.
Yeah. So that's the big question. How do I get people who aren't my friends to come out and see 4 geeky classical flute players playing at a coffee shop?
You got to maximize and minimize.
She used that evil word marketing. Yeah. To maybe you need, jugglers or...
Or Chris Robley's band.
Alicia doesn't hold back. to say the least. No. And she just shoots straight. You know, there's some stuff in there that she says that's sometimes tough for artists to hear, but is also good because you're not going to move along without having someone come alongside you and say, hey, this is how it works.
My favorite quote of hers was, you can't suck.
I love that. Yeah, your friends and family are who you're playing for. That's how you build an audience, is through your friends and family. And that's where you start at. If you ignore those people, if you think that there's some secret coven of cool people that are just going to show up at your show without telling them, then you're going to have a nasty surprise.
Got to build from something.
Yeah.
What you were saying, Chris, about the Lisa's quote about the reality of the glut. I mean, that's where you got to develop that story and help make yourself known to booking agents like Alicia and figure out a way to get through to them that says I'm here but doesn't drive them crazy by sending them 100 emails every day. And so if you haven't heard that episode, episode 3, I would definitely go back and check it out. It's got some great advice if you're trying to get more shows.
One footnote that I have for that, I had just listened to the Lisa Lapine one again, obviously, because that was my choice, but she actually mentioned Alicia Rose in her interview. You know, Portland, small town. But basically her advice was, if you want to get a gig at the best club in town, don't write the booker. Don't write Alicia. Find the bands that are playing that club, meet them, and then eventually you'll just end up at that club because the two bands will be on the bill together.
Yeah.
And she mentions in her interview, Alicia did. She's, you know, if you're an unknown band, talk to somebody else who's bigger or be friends with them, and that'll help.
And I think out of everything I've ever read about being an indie artist, I think that's the best advice I've ever heard, as far as just, you want to get things moving. A lot of people try to isolate themselves and try and say why they're better than everybody else, kind of go to shows, you know, kind of snubbing their noses at other bands instead of meeting them, hanging out, saying, hey, man, let's do some shows together. You guys are great. What can I learn from you? And what gigs can we swap out or whatever? And if you work it from that angle, you're going to get places.
All of a sudden, you're sort of part of something bigger than yourself. I think that's how Lisa phrased it.
Yeah, and also you're tapping into other fans, too. That's how you step out beyond the friends and family circle. You know, you get to a point where it's like, your mom can only come to so many shows before she's in the back yawning. All right, well, the next one was my selection, and it was from episode 7, where we interviewed Jonathan Colton. Jonathan is crazy enough to decide that he was going to do a new song every week, write and record it, and have up on the web every week. So you thought your album in a month experiment was hard. I've got a couple clips from that interview that I thought were really good. So here's clip 1.
They become vested in that. You know? So when they buy their music, when they buy my music, they feel like they're supporting me and they're becoming a part of this story and they're helping to change what happens in the story. And I think that's a really, really great thing.
So in that one, he was reflecting on how the fans' response to what he did. You know, we mentioned the idea of story earlier, and what he really saw was people were feeling like they were involved in his story because they were there commenting on the songs, taking part, and he would do a lot of blogging and kind of involve their input into what he did. He had a giant list of podcasts that were playing his music, and that's how I came across him, was pop culture podcast I listened to that had nothing to do with music. Would just play his song a week, you know, with their weekly podcast. So it really took off for him and got people excited about what he was doing. Can he make it? Is he going to make it a full year? So I've got another clip from that interview here.
I do think that, I think it was Cory Doctorow, the writer, who said, to paraphrase him, something like, obscurity is a much bigger enemy of most artists than piracy is. And it's really true. You know, for a long time, I spent years writing music and not giving it to anybody, and that didn't work at all.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, and I do think, you know, I think it's hard to actually measure the way the economy of it works, but I do think if somebody happens to get some of my music for free, and if they like it and pass it along to a bunch of people and that process continues, you know, if I get a couple of bucks somewhere along that chain of connection, I'm ahead of the game.
I really liked that clip because, for one, if you see what Jonathan's doing, he has a lot of music available for free on his website, but he also sells music directly from his website on CD Baby, iTunes, the whole works. He's seen a lot of success from that, and I think part of it is that he does allow people to get some music for free and sample everything. And I hear so many artists these days talking about you know, people are going to steal my music. You know, well, they haven't even heard it in the first place, you know.
Right. Why are they going to steal it?
And the people are so afraid. I know piracy is a big issue in the news, but that's something totally different than trying to break yourself as an unknown band or an indie artist who maybe even has some fans that's just trying to expand your fan base. I just thought his quote was great. And it goes along with the idea of the glut, and you should be more worried about drifting off into obscurity than someone stealing your music, and you should be more than happy to give it away.
I think it's pretty much standard practice nowadays for most, you know, major labels and probably all the bigger indie labels to give away two or three tracks just online to bloggers and peer-to-peer networks, so the stuff is out there because no one's going to want to buy it.
And they don't have DRM radio yet, do
no,
they?
No, they don't have digital rights management.
You can still copy it.
Yeah. Jonathan, he's a super nice guy. If you go to his website and have questions about how he did certain things, he'll be more than happy to email you and start up a conversation.
Because he spends 8 hours a day online.
Yeah. Well, moving on to our last pick. This is a pick Robert picked out, and it was from episode 12, our interview with I Am Jen Scaturro.
Yeah, I just love this episode mainly, for two things. I love that she's somewhat seclusive artist that is able to be successful because I'm a little bit of a recluse. I also feel like I really learned a lot about how you promote yourself and contact people. And that's what this clip is about that we'll play right now.
You know, obviously you go to the front page of these sites and you see featured videos. And I was wondering, well, how do these people get featured? So I just started to dig through some of the sitemaps and would end up finding some kind of contact email. And I basically just, you know, politely asked, would you consider featuring this video?
Mm-hmm.
And for blowing my mind, several sites ended up featuring it. It ended up doing the best on MySpace, where it was like, you know, one Saturday morning I woke up, and this was weeks after I had emailed all these companies asking if they would feature it. And I just like had, you know, I don't know, it's like 70 responses in my inbox at MySpace, which is, you know, 69 more than normal. So so I thought, something's up. And then that video ended up climbing over the week. It climbed up to like 130,000 hits.
So all you basically did was at MySpace, you just happened to find some real contact information just emailed them.
Yeah, that was it. And what I learned also is that most sites don't get back to you and say, hey, we're going to do this. You know, it really just kind of happened, you know, without me knowing it was going to happen.
It seems almost too simple.
I know. Duh, just ask them.
It just, there was, you know, there's a listener that responded to this episode really well who did the same thing and got their video featured on MySpace. There were some things that I put into place after listening to this episode that got the podcast some success.
Yeah. Well, that was funny because Robert and I were sitting around just, you know, this episode had already posted and we tell people this all the time, you know, we've got our little email tutorial and we were talking about how do you get a podcast featured on iTunes? And Robert goes, why don't we just take our own advice and email them? And that's what we did. And we ended up getting a couple features that ended up on the front page of iTunes, the podcast section last week.
And I emailed a couple companies for promotion for the podcast that never got back to me too. But I think that we know iTunes. iTunes is what we've been preparing this podcast for, and we're really familiar with that venue. We kind of curtailed everything that we do towards what they're looking for, and because of that combination, they responded well.
That's one thing, you know, you got to do your homework, like you're saying. We knew what iTunes was looking for, so we made sure that we did the things that they're looking for, and then we contacted them in a proper manner. We didn't go, yo, what's up?
In all caps.
Yeah,
in all
caps.
Yeah. So those things are important because, you know, just about every artist that emails saying, hey, I love the show. Would you consider using my music in it? We say yes. And hardly any artists actually ask. They email saying we love the show, but they don't say, will you use my music? And it's like, sometimes you just have to ask.
And we had, you know, people like I Am Jen who actually emailed us with a story, and she became featured.
Yep. So it's a lesson to all the folks out there. Lesson for the kids. Well, that's all the clips we have. It was This is hopefully the first annual Christmas episode. We have a lot of great things in store for next year. We've already been doing a bunch of interviews that we'll start getting out to you guys come the first of the year. CDBabyPodcast.com is the website. Hope everyone has happy holidays, safe holidays. Enjoy the remaining Christmas music we have on the podcast, and we'll see you all next year.
I hope we all get iPods in our stockings.
I need a new one of those things.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Music Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.
Do you remember how it used to be to lie on the floor by the light of the Christmas tree? Snow falling, 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 everything else. snow glowing, glowing, reflecting the moon through the dark. And the snow crunching underfoot as we make our way through the park. Making angels in the snow. Sun goes down and the street lights begin to
Christmas. there's nowhere I can't go. Hey, 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 Santa Claus, what you got in that sleigh? Ho, 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 I wish it was someone that I know. All I want from Santa, all I need from Santa, all I want from Santa is you.
Secret, now it's time to tell you. We heard you on a new sleigh. Sam the sleigh won't do. It really wasn't foggy that fateful Christmas Eve. Mean Jack Frost had something up his icy sleeve. We reindeer licked the lichens, Jack Frost laced with brew. Rudolph's nose grew redder like his nose can only do. Jack Frost froze your glasses so you could only see this holly red nose, then you made your famous plea. Now Rudolph by then was feeling mighty fine. He hadn't left the ground, but he was flying blind. Though you couldn't see, Sam's twinkle made us fly. Sam's sleigh twinkled us high into the sky. Santa, we've kept this secret, now it's time to tell you. We heard you on a new sleigh, Sam's sleigh won't do. It really wasn't foggy that fateful Christmas Eve. Mean Jack Frost had something up his icy sleeve.
No one else but old Sam kept us on our course. If you don't use Sam, we'll be filled with remorse. All of us reindeer to the last antler believe Sam's our hero, he inspired us to achieve. At last we've told our secret, please don't be mad. Sam's situation makes us truly sad. Santa, you say it's all a rumor, it isn't true. And as for the secret, you say you always knew.
Santa, we've kept this secret, now it's time to tell you. We heard you on a new sleigh, Sam's sleigh won't do. It really wasn't foggy that fateful Christmas Eve. Mean Jack Frost had something up his icy sleeve. Santa, you say it's all a rumor, it isn't true. And as for the secret, you say you always knew.